the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Is the crypto bear market over already? Today, we're going to dive into the chaos of the so-called crypto crash, a brutal flash event triggered by President Donald Trump's surprise 100% tariff on China, which wiped out $500 billion in market value and $16 billion in liquidations overnight. Bitcoin dropped below $110,000. Ethereum and XRP lost 15 to 30%, leaving traders reeling. Yet amid the rubble, Binance coin surged 16% to just over $1,300, while Solana holds firm at just under $200, defying the bloodbath. Markets started recovering when US President Donald Trump took to social media to reassure everyone that everything will be fine with the tariff wars. No details yet, just a social media post. Joining me to make sense of all of this is no stranger to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, that is macro strategist Shiven Mudli, who's also CEO of market advisory firm Novaik. Shiven, good to talk to you again. Is this a reset or the dawn of a new bull run? Maybe let's break it down a little bit. What happened over the last few days?
Yeah. Hey, Kieran. Good to be back, and to the audience as well. Good to be back. There's a lot happening. I think let's start from fundamental aspect. What's happening on chain? So as of Monday last week, pushed out an article, and I was talking about where derivative markets were and what was happening from a miner's perspective. So miners that were doing Bitcoin at that time. And what we saw was a long drawn out aspect where it was decreasing. Miner activity was sort of decreasing, and their reserves, as price was going higher, they were liquidating quite a significant portion. But all of a sudden, when we started looking at Monday, from Friday into Monday, miners started the accumulation phase all over again. So what was happening? What did miners know in terms of price action that we didn't? And that was very interesting, because that was at that point in time, when I looked at Monday, there was 16 billion at that time in shorts that were accumulating in the derivative market. And miners always are a good indication of what they sometimes, I would say, they generally know when price is topping, and that's what we see from an on-chain perspective. But moving further in, when we measured that to derivative markets were showing that there were a lot more calls building up 4 months out, anything between 2 and 4 months out. That's where the derivative market was positioning. So that means that institutionals or larger institutionals were still trying to hunt for some sort of alpha in the long run, which was 4 months out. And that's what we have to understand, is that structure is still in place. The structure hasn't diminished as yet, even though that we saw this massive drop on Friday. And touching back to this drop on Friday, that with that tweet coming from Truth Social, is it looks more of a macro geopolitical risk into the markets rather than an actual structural change. And I think that's where we have to come to grips that, yes, the market did flush out a significant amount of money, but there was also a level of what we would call, and I think what's trending now, is this level of insider trading, because there were wallets that were created an hour, sometimes 30 minutes before on Friday, that were profiting close to, I would say, 80 billion, 200 million, some on Hyperliquid, and someone on other exchanges. And what is that call? That's 100% insider trading. Someone was insider trading tons of that information. And it just goes to show that, yeah, you know, don't be caught with your pants down when the tide goes out. And that was a very good lesson.
Yeah, and I think those shorts, those big whale shorts that you're talking about, they liquidated very quickly. They knew what was coming in the market. The market dropped. They were out within the hour. Sometimes in minutes, and that has sort of raised a little bit of a sour taste in the mouths of people who are Bitcoin enthusiasts. But the talk about the Bitcoin so-called crash, it wasn't very deep. It went below $110,000. It's now today back above $114,000. Have we seen the end of the 70, 80% drawdowns that we became so accustomed to over the years with Bitcoin, or are institutional investors sort of backstopping this and pouncing whenever they see price weakness, as we saw, you know, in the last few days?
I'm on the fence on this. I'm still indecisive in my thesis around this, fundamentally on the basis that if we're looking at price activity and sort of this price identification and realization, a lot of it happens on Binance. Around about 42 to 45% of it happens on the Binance exchange. And when we start looking at the remainder of the liquidity is options trading, it's derivatives, it's a variety of other things in terms of accumulation on ETFs, treasury functions as well. But is it done? I don't know. I think structurally it's more mature. The infrastructure of Bitcoin drawdown is more mature, that treasuries, ETFs, the larger exchanges are having those accumulation buy orders to know that if something happens, they're going to accumulate it. And that's what we saw with price moving so quickly. It's that a lot of these larger buyers just picking up their averages or just accumulating a bit more. But yeah, I'm a bit uncertain, but I think right now my thesis leans to more that the structure is mature or maturing enough with regulation stepping in that's preventing us from going that 70% drawdown. And we might still see significant drawdowns, but I think it'll be a bit more on the mature scale. But I think when we're looking at these massive drawdowns, it's going to come from these major black swan events, which was looking at what Trump did on Friday, was ideally insider trading. And if we do see regulation sort of step in and secure the market exactly like how it does the traditional side, we might not see this because of the travel rule, KYC, KYB, in terms of who and what is buying.
You've got to point out, I guess, which you already have, that Trump has got the ability to move markets with social media posts in a way that I think nobody else has ever done. And it is raising some questions about this, you know, that he would tank the market on Friday and then come back with a social media post a day or two later saying everything's going to be fine with China. We want to help them. You know, we don't want to destroy their economy. I mean, that begins to look a little bit like market manipulation, does it not?
It is. It is, and I put a post of this on LinkedIn over the weekend, and I was looking at the mineral resource report from the U.S. in terms of the rare earth minerals that are needed by the U.S. Something like this impacts GDP quite significantly in the U.S. in terms of the semiconductors, because if we see like the flow of money currently in the traditional ecosystem, that I would say 8 to 10 companies currently control that AI monopoly, and then boom, majority of the stock market price rally now is on semiconductor. It's this AI hype, it's the technology, it's everything moving, and who needs semiconductors, and the money circulation of NVIDIA getting OpenAI shares, OpenAI buying AMD, AMD is invested by NVIDIA, and then this whole cycle. And I mean, when we start looking at that, there's market manipulation or stock manipulation in the traditional market, but looking at the capital market, Trump has an influence. I think he's played a very strong hand in terms of showing that he's a crypto player and he's equally a traditional markets player as well.
All right, what's happening with Binance Coin, or it goes by the ticker name BNB? It's been on a tear. I mean, I remember, I think the beginning of the year was below 10,000 Rand. I'm talking in Rands here, not dollars. Today, it's above 20,000 Rand. Also, Solana holding up quite well. What's going on? These altcoins seem to be doing quite well.
So BNB, like disclosure, I've been an investor in Solana and BNB for a while. And in that, like what I believe in BNB is the ecosystem is quite strong. And also they have a burning ecosystem, if I remember correctly, that with their token distribution. So that's quite interesting. But when we start looking at the incentives that come out of Binance, it's starting to look like a major player. And there was an interesting article I was reading over the weekend as well. It was talking about how these tokens are moving from a governance level into a liquidity level. But what are the conditions? Because if you're promising tokens, which are like BNB, and should it be equity or should it be liquidity, and how does it work? There's a very interesting dynamic there. But looking at where Binance is, I think there were problems on Binance. Binance wasn't sort of alluded in the situation with this drawdown because some of their coins did depeg. And Binance showed their trust. They were very proactive in the market in terms of coming out and saying, we understand that the depegging happened, and they're putting up like 230 million in terms of putting investors back into place for the depegging. So
I think just explain the depegging, what happened there. Yep. We're talking here about the Binance stablecoin.
Yeah, so the Binance stablecoin, but all, I think it was also BN Sol, which was a derivative of Solana, in which also depegged. And because of the arbitrage that then fundamentally existed for that period of time, there was chaos. So Binance stepped out and said, look, we, because of the depegging for that period in time, we'll be proactive and reimburse investors for that X amount in which what was lost. So I guess there's a lot of community and there's a lot of like market-driven aspects in terms of where Binance Exchange is growing towards. The BNB token has very good programs. Binance also recently launched, I think it was their VIP institutional, which then positions them against Coinbase institutional in coming into the market to provide treasury solutions and crypto as a service solutions to large corporates that do not want to move with Coinbase institutional. So I guess it's a give and take. So you can have Coinbase institutional, you can have Binance, but it's creating this opportunity for treasurers to step in and say, where can we buy the cheapest liquidity? Do we only have to go to Coinbase? We can go to the OTCs and we can go to Binance now, and they'll trust Binance, obviously, because of that institutional level. So I think that trust is now built in, that liquidity is going to be coming from institutional treasury players that are playing in this DeFi treasury space. So that's one aspect. Second is the Binance ecosystem has grown quite significantly, welcoming a lot of tokens, new projects into the ecosystem, and they have something called alpha trading. I think it is, and it's like a meme pool sort of function where it's generating this liquidity, but holding BNB and trading within the alpha ecosystem has also created advantages there. Large profits, quite exorbitant, a lot of rewards, a lot of airdrops in that function. And I think that's where a lot of that demand has sort of crept in. And to go back, that Binance as well, a lot of retail traders play on Binance. 45% price discovery happens on Binance compared to other exchanges. So one, that's fundamentally where Binance, a lot of opportunity comes into the BNB token being so high, the products they launched recently. But then let's step back into Solana. So what is happening on Solana right now? Solana's ecosystem is really booming. And the fundamental ecosystem there is Solana is trying to position itself as this DeFi rail in order to create an ecosystem for real world assets and a lot more mobility in terms of a DeFi function that wants to play in the crypto space. Because it's fast, it's cheaper. However, if you look at guys like Tron would fundamentally play in the payments network, not so much the DeFi space, but there will be overlaps. But Solana is really dominating that as well. There's a flood into that ecosystem from a behavioral point of view, with Solana welcoming a lot of people into the ecosystem for these projects. But Solana, again, I think has a very strong community. A lot of people are playing in Solana. A lot of people are holding Solana for the long run, including myself. And I think that's what that opportunity is looking at, is the community is so strong in Solana. And I think that's, people would just keep accumulating for a while until something changes.
You mentioned a term there, crypto as a service, which is being sold to companies. Explain what that is.
Yeah. So crypto as a service is sort of this new product, but it's not opaque to the market in terms of what has existed. So think of it as the bank offers your product, and this product is maybe a credit line and FX, for example. So in Binance institutional side, they're saying, hey, if you're playing in the crypto space, you need security in terms of infrastructure. You need the right guidance in terms of that infrastructure, and you need access to liquidity in order to run your 24-hour treasury, for example. And treasury meaning FX as a simple term. So Binance steps in, Coinbase Institutional steps in, Binance VIP Institutional steps in and says, no problem, you have this ecosystem of us where your wallet infrastructure is now with us. You can buy and sell Bitcoin, stablecoin, acquire yields through staking your stablecoins. And that has become a primary service for a lot of these treasury companies that are playing in the crypto space. And I think that product would eventually evolve as crypto as a service to on-site settlement. It goes back to that aspect of a 24-hour market becomes a reality very, very soon.
Interesting. All right, XRP and Ethereum, they were hit pretty hard in the last few days. Were they overhyped?
I think so, yeah. I'm not going to lie about that. I really think so. XRP, the SEC case was a bit more of some positives there. XRP also took a lot of...
Yeah, maybe just explain that there was an SEC case about XRP, which they managed to get out of. So, that created a lot of hype around it.
Yes, and that hype really supported what followed next over the next 10 months from that. And that was, they went on to buy a prime broker, XRP, Ripple went on to buy a prime broker. Ripple went on to have a lot more significant rails.
Ripple being the issuer of XRP, right?
XRP, yeah. And XRP is seen as this governance token and this function in which you could move within the XRP network. So we saw that massive run to $3 a little while ago, and a lot of hodlers, diamond hand people made a lot of money over their accumulation of XRP then. But XRP is in this level a sense of they're playing in an institutional space and trying to replicate and redo the Swift network. It's a very hard task because a lot of money moves through that Swift network, and they're in the space to decentralize and lower fees in the XRP network. So XRP is seen as the sentiment token into the financial ecosystem, or how I like to see it, right? It's this aspect of the more the world evolves into this decentralized ecosystem and adopts more functions, the XRP tends to be a beneficial, I would say, would benefit from that long-term growth in that changes. But I mean, the Swift network recently announced they're also exploring blockchain as well. And what does that mean for them? But stepping into Ethereum, was Ethereum overhyped? Possibly, yes. I believe so as well. And that comes down to what they were looking. There were a lot of projects coming into the ecosystem. There was, I would say, different things playing into the ecosystem. They were scaling in the right objective, but the way it was running and why it dropped so much, I have a feeling, I haven't done much analytics on it as yet, but I have a feeling that exactly how short traders were caught with their, long traders were caught with their pants down, Ethereum as well were caught with their pants down. And that was because Ethereum moved from like 2,700, 3,000 to 4,600 within a matter of 10 months. And that move just created this assumption that this price was never going to stop. This price was going to reach 5,000, 6,000. And all of a sudden, everyone that was leveraged in those Ethereum positions just got wrecked in that decoupling of Bitcoin. And we're used to it. And I mean, listeners that play in crypto for so long know that these things happen. And I think that's where Ethereum really fell short, was a lot of traders had no protection and hedge solutions on that.
And I think also from a technical point of view, it was a double top. So anybody doing technical trading should watch out for those potential resistance barriers and expect a pullback. We won't need to see, you know, whether this is going to be more severe. It is up again now today, and it looks like there's a bit of recovery happening. But finally, Shiven, where are we in the crypto cycle at the moment? Try and sort of tie this together. There seems to be a number of different schools of thought about this. You know, this, oh, we're a long way from the peak. some saying that this is, you know, the bear market, if you want to call it that, it's over. We're now, you know, back on track. We needed to blow off a little bit of steam so we can continue on this wonderful bull journey.
I would say I'm still bullish. My thesis is in play. My thesis is strongly in play. My concerns are coming out of Japan currently with the yields, and then that causing sort of a ripple effect across the market, which I am concerned about. It is a concern in my thesis. However, when looking at crypto as a whole, I think the next steps is what does the SEC do next? Do they expedite ETFs? Do they create more pools that are sufficient? Do we have regulations stepping in to support real world assets? But from what the data says on chain, I think we still have a run up till for a little while, for the next 4 months. That's what the derivative market's saying. It's four months is pointing to February. We still might see highs in Bitcoin. So I don't know. I have this number in my head, but I know everyone always would come at me, but I would see there's a potential. I'm not saying this is my prediction, but there's a potential of 150 within this year, maybe February, between December and February. My model show it fundamentally on the basis of how it's modeling open interest and the maths behind it. But that's my thoughts. I think if we go shorter, right now, you would have to have a lot of short sellers, and short sellers are only around about 6 billion. So if it does move short, it's going to wipe out another 16 billion in long positions. And that we would see at 101 to 97. And it's not impossible. It's not impossible. I guess I'm still looking for my 97 levels to get back into Bitcoin. But the way the market's positioning, I think we might see a bit of a move higher for a little while.
There's one final thing. Just talking about double tops, there's a double bottom of the Rand US dollar at around 1720. You and I have spoken about that in the past. That has kind of broken through, you know, 1750, there was some resistance there. But there is quite a solid double bottom around about these levels. Do you see a reversal here?
Yeah, South Africa's the Rand is living in a dream world from my perspective. I don't think there's anything locally that's supporting the Rand. But a lot of the Rand strength is coming from dollar weakness, is the macro environment of the dollar. And like looking at the Rand, yeah, I mean, if you're taking hedges out over a long period of time, if you're taking interest rate swaps, if you're looking at that the 1 year, maybe 2 year horizon, I think these are, and even over 6 months, I think they're still decent levels to take forward covers on. But yeah, that's where my thoughts are. I mean, I recently accumulated some euros because I've been waiting so long for it to break 20 rand. So I finally got some euros back into my pocket. But I think the market is running on a real fine thread when looking at where it is. And I don't blame people for taking advantage now, maybe trade finance lines, or any other thing, or forward contracts, anything of that matter. But yeah, it's an advantage right now. It's a lot more headwinds right for South Africa than there are tailwinds.
Right. Shiven Mudli, we're going to leave it there. Thanks very much for that absolute masterclass, actually, in crypto and in the Rand. So great to talk to you again, Shiven, CEO of market advisory firm Novaik.
Thanks, Kiran. Looking forward to the next one.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kiran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.